Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured, it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So, head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Welcome back to the episode, guys. Today, I'm sitting down with Ethan from Decca Guitars. We get kind of right into this episode, so it's kind of like a fast start, but that's all good. There are a few little audio issues here or there, so I do apologize. I tried to clean it up the best I could. But before we get into today, just as per usual, let's go ahead and knock out this housekeeping. If you want to check me out on any social media platform, you can check me out on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Pretty much if you search Man the Helm, you're going to find me there. But if you don't want to do all that, you can just scroll right on down to the show notes. I'll have my link tree down there. You can have everything laid out for you, all nice and neat. Also down there, if you guys are interested, I do have links to my Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you can help support this show. But if Patreon's not your thing, that is totally fine as well. You should check out the fine products that I have affiliate links for, such as Stringjoy Guitar Strings and Runway Audio, two companies that I really believe in. They make awesome quality stuff, and if you click the link, I'll get a little kickback from that, which is always appreciated. But enough of this. Let's get into today's episode with Ethan from Decca Guitars.
If I wanted to go back to the beginning, you know, like why did I start building guitars? I think at first I built like a kit guitar, you know, because I was cheap and I thought it would be cheaper than purchasing like a nice Telecaster. And it turns out that it can be, but as soon as you start going down the rabbit hole of building guitars, it certainly isn't cheaper. Right. Fortunately for me, my dad, you know, he's the reason probably why I got into guitar to begin with, because he wasn't a musician, but he loved classic rock. So I grew up listening to KC95 here in St. Louis. So they had like the Daily Dose of Led Zeppelin. So always loved listening to Zeppelin, Cream, Hendrix, that sort of stuff. And so it was just the natural progression that I got into guitar. He also loved woodworking. So when I got a little older, And I'd already built, you know, kick guitars and done stuff like that. And of course needed his help for some of the stuff that I was just oblivious to because I didn't pick it up through osmosis from hanging around with them.
Absolutely.
He was like, hey, you know, let's try and build one. Mm-hmm. And we did it, you know, without any CNC or anything like that. And I my brother has it right now. It was a really rough build, you know,
of course,
but
it
taught us a lot, you know? And that was probably 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
And then, you know, kind of got the bug from there and wanted to build another one, but this time I wanted to do like a chambered or semi-hollow design. Mm-hmm. And it was great, except, you know, like for me, like a pick guard, when it matches up right with the contours and everything, and it fits perfectly around that neck pocket, like it's just aesthetic, but it's
right.
So important. You know, because we were doing this with free cuts on a bandsaw and things like that, like those little finishes weren't quite there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy down in Rolla, really close to us here in St. Louis. And he actually builds these CNCs that you design, you build yourself, you assemble okay. yourself. And so he talked to me about it and he's like, hey, you know, what do you think about this? I mean, you had me at CNC. I don't care what we have to do. Let's do it. And, you know, purchase that, put it together. A lot of trials and tribulations to get the thing honed in. Mm-hmm. But now that we have it up and running, I can now sketch out my ideas in a 3D modeling, do the manufacturing on there. Now, granted, it doesn't just poop out perfect guitars.
Absolutely. You know,
it still takes a lot of handwork and stuff like that, which is cool because it's also taught me, hey, you know, don't try and make everything perfect in the model. You
right.
know, now you can take it and you can work this by hand, you know, and it just gives you consistency in your products.
Mm-hmm. Well, and see, that's the thing. And just so everybody knows it's listening, you know, this conversation right here happened because I think you, either I came across you or you liked a post of mine or something. And I just started scrolling to your Instagram and dude, your guys' stuff is so like aesthetically pleasing on the craftsmanship, but also way different than anything I've ever seen before. Where did the like body shape kind of come up with you guys?
Yeah, that's so hard to say. Cause you know, when I always liked the Red Special.
Okay. Yeah.
Not only do I like, you know, of course, Queen's first four albums or just mm-hmm. always go back and listen to them. But I love that shape that he made. But I've always wanted to do something a little different.
Yeah.
I realized that everything can be derivative. You know, mm-hmm. I could make a Strat inspired body, but it would probably end up looking like a Jackson Dinky or a Charvel or something.
Okay. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Right.
Everything's derivative.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to derive my inspiration from something else. And so I tried to blend the Red Special with a Gibson F style mandolin.
Yeah.
So you can see him over there, that little lower horn there, you know, like how it sort of cuts away like a F style mandolin. I wasn't about to do that disservice to myself and my father of trying to do the scroll.
Sure.
On the upper part of there. That's a nightmare. I can only imagine doing binding on that.
Right.
But that with the Red Special, that was sort of the inspiration. And then people have told me it's like it really looks like Bigsby guitars.
Sure. Yeah.
Like the really early ones, which I'd never even seen a picture until somebody told me that.
Right. Well, no, that's really cool, man, because I can definitely see the inspiration that you were going for and what influenced you, but it's still different and it's your own with you guys, you know, and that's what I think is really cool. It's something that I don't know how to describe it. It just like, it really like immediately when I started scrolling through your Instagram, I'm like, I got to get this dude on the podcast to see what this is all about. Cause honestly, like I have no, we've never even talked besides just the DMing stuff we did on Instagram, you know? And
yeah, I mean, I like some of your posts, like where you're playing and stuff like that. But yeah, you're right. It was just sort of out of the blue, which is good. You know,
yeah.
what social media is for, apparently.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of, when did you guys really start pushing? Cause I know your Instagram is a little small at the moment, but like it shouldn't be. That's what's like freaking me out right now. You know what I mean?
That's on me. Okay. I'm a 31 year old guy with a kid, and social media for me is just, it's so on the back burner. I grew up with it. You know, I
was
there in high school and stuff. And then I realized that I was just so much happier when I just focused on my life and focused on what I was doing. So that's also why I'm kind of bad about posting sometimes including people in what I'm doing. But now I've been trying to be more cognizant about that.
Absolutely.
It was probably around 2020 when, you know, we really started to pick up and go like, okay, I got a design. I've got a cool idea. And one of the problems we always had whenever we were putting together, you know, like bolt-on style guitars, is that there's always that little bit of slop before you put the bolts in. And I hate that yaw, because if that yaw is there and you already have your bridge set, you know, then you're going to have problems.
Right.
If you're smart, you don't set the bridge until you set the neck. But still, I was like, you know, I think I can come up with a solution for this. So I'm not sure if you've seen the videos of me on Instagram, like swinging the guitar necks.
Yep, around. I sure have, man.
You know, it was just a simple thing. You know, I'm not going to patent it or anything like that, because I don't think you can patent a wood joint. You know, they've been around for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
But a unique mortise and tenon that just allows it to pop into place, goes in that same place every time. It doesn't move anymore. And, you know, if you get another neck from us, because say you want a fat neck to complement your skinny neck, boom, you just drop it in, and it's always going to be the same.
Nice.
And it took a little bit of work with the machining to get the tolerances exactly right. But we ended up doing that. And that's when it was like, okay, let's start pushing this and, you know, see if we can get it in the hands of some people.
Yeah, for sure. To touch back on like the social media stuff, man, I mean, I know that's the day in which we live in, but I'm the same as you, man. You know, I'm just a little bit older. I'm 33, but I've got a wife, I've got two kids, you know, I work a 9-to-5, you know, this isn't my normal job. And, you know, it's so hard to be able to, especially for you, I can't even imagine with running a small business like that. And on top of having a family, you know what I mean? Trying to get everything. So how do you kind of like separate your day out to kind of make sure everybody gets what they need out of that, and you can still focus on the business too?
Fortunately for me, like my little guy, he's going to be 2 in July.
Okay.
He's a ball of energy.
Yeah.
And he'll hang out with me when I do most of my work.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So of course, if I'm running the CNC or something like that, like he's not going to be around. I don't have headphones for his head yet to, like, you know, protect his ears. But, you know, just the simple sort of things like that I do a lot of, the sanding and the fret pressing and stuff like that. He's completely enamored with it. Like, nice. What are you doing? Now, it could be a double-edged sword. Like, pretty soon I could just start pumping out nothing but relics because he starts getting his hands on them.
Right.
But, you know, he certainly comes first.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, when I get a free time, because he's got a nap or something like that, I'm very efficient. Normally, like a time like this in the evening is when I would be doing, you know, that finish sort of work.
Sure. Yeah.
Just to get everything ready for the next day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy. And you know this from having two kids. You're like, oh my God, when you first have them, you're like, my world's never going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
But then you find out how adaptive you can become.
Oh, absolutely.
Really quick.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all the stuff like on the periphery that you used to think was valuable that isn't valuable anymore, it just sort of goes away. Unfortunately, that's sort of where social media went for me a little bit, but I always have to touch back in with it. And, you know, good on you for, you know, being a good person who's like, hey man, I want to talk to you. Like, let's talk about guitars and stuff. It sort of reinvigorates my hope.
Yeah. I mean, well, so here's the thing with me. I mean, this show isn't massive or big by any means, but, you know, I understand completely how it is, you know, trying to get everything you need done for your life, just in the personal side of things, but on top of that, trying to work your job, whether that's a small business or a normal 9-to-5, and not having that time. So that was really like the big motivation. It's like, I just love the Instagram account. And I was like, more people need to hear about this. You know what I mean? So that's really what it is. And that's the cool part of social media for me. It's like, you can still be somewhat active, but, you know, hopefully something like this will, you know, kind of help you out a little bit on that front too. You know what I mean? Because that's really what it's all about in the music community for me, you know, helping everybody.
And I think the music community is really good about that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have that same competitiveness that you have in other industries and things like that. You know, if there was a woodworker out there that was really interested in like, hey, like, let me like learn something from you and like, we'll trade information and talk. I'm always really open, because for me, that's how you get ahead.
Sure.
You know, we'll talk about it more later. I can nerd out about neck joints and wood joints all day, you know? But I think that that's actually a good thing for guitar players moving forward. You know, people reimagining how the instrument should come together, you know? And social media is perfect for stuff like that. I've seen so much cool stuff. I've learned from so many people, and yeah, I didn't mean to like just throw it under the bus like willy-nilly. It's not videos and people, you know, only posting their W's, you know?
All right. Well, no, and I mean, that's a cool thing to have too, because that's what I've noticed a lot with here, some of the more recent posts, I guess, with, or I guess, I don't know, I guess it wouldn't be recent, but the neck joint thing is a really big deal, right? I mean, especially for the instrument. I obviously am not as deep as you are into it, but I understand that that's a very crucial part of that instrument coming together. And if it's not going to be right, you're going to have a lot more issues with that small piece of that body to that neck, and everything else is going to kind of be a little wonky if it's not good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then, you know, if you look at like a Gibson style neck joint, which is how it's been done for so long, you know, even before Leo Fender, things were just getting glued together.
Yeah.
And eventually that glue starts to come apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if you've ever had to have it for one of your guitars, or if you've seen it done a neck reset.
Yep.
That's major surgery on a guitar.
Yeah.
And it costs a good amount of money. Now, certainly a lot of those older instruments are worth that repair. I encourage people to do it. And I'm certainly not trying to put all luthiers out of business.
No.
But I think that that Leo Fender was onto something with a more modular system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I kind of like what you're doing too. I was perusing through your website earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was somewhere. Oh, where was it at? A mission statement for working musicians. You know what I mean? That was what is that on your website? I'm sorry, I cannot remember it to save my life.
No, it's basically just saying that like I get it. Clearly aesthetics are important to me.
Yeah.
You know, my mom and dad won't let me forget the story of me as a little kid, like lining up all the cars by color. Like I'm always that sort of detail oriented. However, like super high gloss polyurethane finishes.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that are never going to be done by us.
Okay.
You know, right now our guitars are finished in nitro, but I have good mind to switch over to a completely shellac based system.
Okay.
Because I think it's a better finish. You know, that's how classical guitars were finished, still are. And it's going to wear similar to nitro.
Right.
You know, the guitar was not meant to be a showroom car. It's not meant to be that thing that's always glossy and perfect. It's meant for you to put your hands on it, for it to get rubbed, for it to get eventually dinged and dented. And that's just really important for me. You know, just also with that, I don't want to charge a crazy high price tag.
Sure.
I don't want to, you know, I love what they're doing over at Novo Guitars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's really cool what they do. It's kind of pricey for me. You know, I look at that as a working musician, $4,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody contacts me and they want them to build them a solid body, you know, it starts off at $1,000. and then we work it out from there.
Yeah.
Sometimes it goes up a little bit more for finish options and things like that, but I look at that as a really fair price where I can still make money that, you know, makes everybody happy. But at the end of the day, they're not going to be looking over at this instrument and go like, don't even look at it. I don't want you to scratch it.
Absolutely. Well, from a gigging standpoint, I mean, I'm in the, I'm just north of Nashville, and you know, that's the thing, man. I love when my guitars start to get to that point, you know, it, because every little ding, every little scratch has a story associated with it. And it's even it, but it's almost not as pleasing when you have those like super thick high gloss finishes, because it's never going to happen like that. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get the scratches, you're going to get the dings, of course.
They're going to be ugly though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, having guitars that will naturally wear to where you are playing as a player, it's so awesome to me when you get the, like, couple years in of playing that guitar regularly. And next thing you know, it's almost like a fingerprint of the musician on that instrument, you know?
Yeah. It's a really beautiful thing. And I remember watching so many videos, like how to relic and how to do this sort of thing. And I'm not going to relic the guitar.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. You know, that sort of thing. But there's always imperfections.
Sure.
And
sure.
that's one of the things I love too, is like, you know, I'm not going to sit over here and be like, it's perfect. Everything's perfect. You probably would never notice, but I'll point out every single flaw, you know, and that sort of thing. And at the end of the day, it's just a reminder. This is the first thing, you know, like, you're just going to continue to add to the story of this instrument. And I'm not going to get in the way of that, obsessing over it, putting on like a finish that's like this thick, you know, because that's not what musicians want. We're not, like I said, I can't reiterate enough, we are not dealing with cars. We're dealing with guitars.
Yeah.
They might have similar colors, but they're totally different beasts.
Yeah. Well, they're meant to be played. They're meant to be enjoyed by the player, and they're meant to inspire the player. You know, they're not, like you said, they're not meant to just sit in a case somewhere in a showroom-esque setting in your house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you pick them up, you play them. Honestly, right before you got on here to do that, I was about to walk over and be like, well, now's a perfect opportunity. I got a couple of minutes to sit down and play. Out of curiosity, have you ever played a neck with a shellac finish on it?
I have not.
No? Have you played many nitro necks?
I have.
One thing I noticed when I started, finishing guitar necks and stuff like that, is that nitro will be sticky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really sticky.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothered me, because that, like, you know, you can deal with stickiness on a body a little bit, that sort of thing. But on a guitar neck, you want that to be smooth.
Yeah.
So as I started dreaming up, like, how can I make this right? I stripped the nitro off this neck and I started practicing, of course, on a scrap piece of wood. But I was like, I think I could do this on the neck. I started French polishing it. They finish classical guitars. And it, on a neck, it comes together really fast,
mm-hmm.
because you're not worried a ton about building up a ton of finish, because at the end of the day, you and I both want the finish to wear off.
Right.
And you just to be, you know, sanding down that neck with your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, did that, but then I let it cure and let it dry. And I was like, this is the best feeling neck I've ever felt in my life. You get the glassy look, you know, that you get with nitro, but it doesn't have any stick to it.
Nice.
So from that point forward, I don't even care if somebody asks for it. It's like, no, just trust me on this. Like, I know you want nitro on your neck. You say you want that, but you don't. Like, shellac is going to feel better. It's going to look like nitro, but you're not going to have any of those problems.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of those things, though. There are specific things about companies and whatnot that, you know, we're not going to waver on, because this is what we believe in and this is what we think is right, you know. And the customer usually, it's one of those rare instances where, you know, what's the common phrase? The customer's always right. Well, they might be, but they also might not understand exactly why you're doing this until they get it in their hands and physically feel the instrument, too. And then it'll be one of those just like, oh, wow. Yeah. I like this way more than nitro. Why would I think, you know, and now we're going to have, you know, a change mindset about everything.
Yeah, actually it happened just a couple of weeks back. I had a guy and my current story right now, the build was for him. And he was like, I really like satin necks. And I was like, well, yeah, it's like, cause you like, based on the guitars, it's like, it's all polyurethane. You know, like satin polyurethane definitely feels way better than gloss poly. I was like, hear me out, come over. You know, he lived in the area, come over, like try out some of these necks. And he was playing them and stuff. And he's like, wow, these are super slick. Like they're smooth. I'm like, trust me on this. He's like, I'll make you something because I love playing guitar too. And I do not like it when things are sticky and gummy and that sort of thing. You know, right. I would never hand that to you and be like, hey, you know, here's your new guitar.
Right. Well, with you guys being a small business, I actually just talked to Barry from Grez Guitars a few weeks ago.
Oh, very cool. I've been checking out some of his stuff.
Yeah. He's a super awesome guy. One of the nicest people I've ever met. And, but we were kind of talking about like that transition period that you start to get to when your customer base becomes almost too big for what you can provide. You know, where are you kind of at right now with Deca?
Oh, I'm very early. I would love to get to that point sooner rather than later. It's, you know, right now, I'll generally have a couple of orders going.
Okay.
So it's very manageable for me and my father.
Yeah. You
know? And very manageable for me and my wife.
Absolutely.
With everything going on, you know. But you know, if we get to that point. Like we've talked about it before, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
But then absolutely. You start talking about, I have some people that I already know that I would bring into the fold.
Sure. Like here. Okay.
You're going to help me out if you're interested in it, which if you hate your job as much as I think you do, like I'll pay you, make it worth your while.
Nice. Well, see, that's the thing. And I've tried to explain this on the podcast before because one of my biggest things is about like finding what you love to do and then just going all in on it. But also when I say going all in on it, for instance, for like me, I have a wife, I have a mortgage, I have stuff I got to take care of. Okay. So I have to be able to multitask the goal that I want to get to, but there always are all these leaps that you have to take. You know what I mean? You have to take that first initial leap of just saying, I'm going to do this, this is what I'm going to do. And even before that, I mean, you had to take the time and experience of getting your hands on the process of making these guitars. You know what I mean? So it's one of those constant things that happen. So it's really cool that you guys have a plan kind of already generally in place for when and if that starts to happen. You know what I mean?
And, you know, like there's a great phrase. I'm not sure if it's in English or another language, but it's like, you know, man makes plans and God laughs.
Right.
So, you know, I realize it might not always go that way, you know, and maybe that when that time comes around, the people I would have thought, you know, they don't work out and I'm just sort of swamped for a little while.
Yeah.
And that is one of those things where, you know, I still trust that I could always turn to people. Like, what was his name at Grease Guitars? Because I haven't talked to him before.
Oh, Barry.
Barry? Yep. You know, I could turn to Barry and just be like, hey, man, this is the situation I'm in. Like, please give me some advice or turn to the podcast and just sort of find a way through that. But, you know, as it is right now, I'm just trying to grow it, just trying to get to that point where, you know, and I know I'm kind of crazy right now for charging so little for guitars.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, you have to be smart about it. If you want to be able to get your name out there for right now, you kind of have to make it make sense for the customer that's buying it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't have anything with the exception of the aesthetics. I mean, especially for somebody, like me, I mean, I'm on the right on the edge of the Tennessee and Kentucky border on the east side of Tennessee or west side of Tennessee. Okay. So if I wanted to maybe try to get up there and get a guitar and check it out, that wouldn't be that hard of a thing for me. It's not a long drive. You know what I mean?
No.
But for somebody maybe on the East Coast or the West Coast, or maybe more in the central west, you know, side of the States, that's not going to be a feasible thing, you know? So you have to make it make sense at the price point for it to still be something that you have no idea what this company is kind of about really.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to try one of these guitars. So I think you're doing the right thing right now by charging less. I mean, it kind of just is what it is in this situation, you know.
And the way I looked at it was exactly like that, you know, get into the hands of as many people as possible.
Right.
That provides critical feedback where it counts, like in long-term player experience. And, you know, if you still remain small at that point, you still remain nimble enough to change. You know, like I've got, you know, a solid body sort of offset design that I'm working on right now that I'm looking to have the prototype done in the end of June.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Just have that out and, you know, get that in the hands of some players like that. And then, you know, do a run of that, because then I can learn more. And as I grow, then I can start to go like, hey, you know, tell you what, babe, I'm actually going to take this trip and I'm going to try and get it, these guitars into these stores on the East Coast or on the West Coast or here and there,
yeah.
You know, even though I look at it and I think that Barry would probably agree, word of mouth, growing your business online is really the way to do it, because people, they want to know who you are. You know, they want to meet up with you and they want to feel the neck before, you know, you finish it. They want to touch their hands on the process. And I think that's important too. You
Absolutely.
Know, I want to sort of cater the sound to what you do with it. You know?
Well, and it's really cool too, especially what I love about, you know, the smaller builders and the community of smaller builders, that even if it's not just guitars, but just anything music related, you know, it's one of those things that if it's something that I want specifically now as a player, it's awesome, because I can just send you an email and be like, hey, what do you think about this, this, and this? And we're going to make it happen now. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's also cool utilizing that too with other people, more, I guess, established on social media would be a good way. I don't want to say like the demo artist people, but I mean, that's really one of the best ways to do it too. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like, what was it? There was a demo artist that I watched all the time. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he got some Eastwood stuff way back in the day. And next thing you know, they just blew up. You know what I mean? Which is a good and bad thing, because I don't know what their situation was at that point in time, because, you know, that volume of interest might not have been feasible for what they had, you know, available at the time.
I could be wrong. I think Eastwood, I know now they manufacture overseas a lot of their stuff, and they still make a pretty quality product. But back then they were probably manufacturing here in the States. You know, we don't have a big manufacturing setup.
Right.
You know, we have, you know, my father's workshop and my workshop, and we just sort of make it work. And, you know, if something like that sort of blow up overnight happened, that would be a situation where I'd be like, I don't even think we can find the quantity of wood we have that's up to our quality standards to make it happen. There's a lot of cool YouTubers out there and stuff, and I've debated with it, but the truth is, you know, like as I've been chugging along at this, like I've had enough business to keep me busy, not slammed by any means, but you know, a healthy little pace. And I know it's crazy. I mean, you know, like there's a part of me that's kicking myself, but it's like, you know, I'm sort of satisfied. I was comfortable, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't want to get to that point too quickly, because you're not going to have the lessons you're going to need to learn to be at that scale that quickly. You know what I mean? There could be that. And like what you're doing right now with like the biggest thing that I would assume for me is the constant improvement of whatever design you're doing, along with the customer feedback. You know what I mean? And having a small base of customers right now, relatively speaking, is probably the best thing, because you can really refine these small details that will eventually, you know, be able to be something you can do regularly. You know what I mean? Not have to think about it so much. One of the things that I really loved about what I saw, I love that Tele or that T-style.
It's all good, Tele. Yeah. It's actually another one. It's brothers hanging over there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things too. Cause I love what you guys are doing with that more unique body shape, that Red Special sort of inspired body shape, but it's also cool too. Cause now that gives people something they know right off the bat. You know, it's not something that it's so off the wall form that they can't get behind. It's like, okay, well, that's familiar to me. That seems safe, you know, in my mind or whatever, you know what I mean? So
it was funny. You know, you're exactly right about remaining small, because then you can always work out little manufacturing problems that you have and that sort of thing. And Lord knows we've had enough of those.
Absolutely.
You know, like there's enough like guitar shaped dead pieces of wood, like that are just, I want to hang them in some way, just as constant reminders, like, hey, don't do that.
Right.
Don't do that. Don't do that. And this particular body, I'm actually going to sell them at a discount, because initially for that customer, you know, who I'm posting on Instagram about right now, like he wanted a, you know, just a simple sort of telly thing. He'd seen some of the other guitars, but he's like, hey, I just kind of want to play it safe right now. I'm like, that's fine. I can make the AT style body. And did the first neck, but for whatever reason, the dots, the fret markers, mm-hmm. were just off center from the 12th fret up. They're still within the fret's boundaries.
Sure.
But it was jarring enough for me that I was like, this is a problem. This is a problem. Gonna have to redo this. So then this body is going to get paired with the off-centered frets and it'll be sold for $700.
Nice.
Just here, you know, like it's still a great playing guitar. It's only an aesthetic problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, here you can have it for cheap and hopefully, you know, you play the hell out of it like you would a player series telly or something like that.
Right.
Because if my concoction is correct, I'll be able to do it in a nice E-type green.
That's cool. Well, see, that's really cool with what you're doing too. You know, you have something that is just aesthetically just a little off from you, but that's another way you can get the name out. You know what I mean? You can just be like, well, you know, this is just a small mistake. And I love that you're kind of just owning that mistake. And it's like, yeah, this is what it is. No big deal. We're going to fix it next time. But, you know, if you want to check this out, it's still an amazing thing. It's just, looks a little funky if you look a little too close at it, you know?
And it's really just, if you look a little too close at it,
right.
Like those aren't centered. And yeah, that's just it. You know, I'm more than happy just if somebody else has it. You know, I don't need another guitar hanging in here. You know, right. I'd rather have somebody else having it. So, so yeah, I'm not sure if I'll make a regular thing out of doing tellies or strats or things like that. But I am working on an offset design right now that is more in line with, you know, that traditional Jaguar. Or I noticed okay. You play a Reverend.
Yep.
Yep. Much more in line with that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to have a different neck joining system.
Okay.
Because one of the problems I've had with Fenders and even our current neck joints that we do is, you know, I know Philip McKnight calls it the handshake. Like when you get up here on a guitar.
No, you're good. You're fine.
So when you get up here on a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're playing like, you know, it just feels a little clunky right here with like a little, you know, bolt on neck going on. Like this one, you know, I've rounded it over and stuff and recessed this plate just to make it a little comfier, but it still wasn't working. So I devised a way that I could do like a Spanish style heel, like
You'd
find on a Les Paul or something like that, but it still is a bolt on.
Nice.
And it's still, instead of using a mortise and tenon, it uses a dovetail system where it'll slide in. You'll put a bolt right in here, bolt there, boom, it'll stay. It's not going to go anywhere. You'll never need to do a neck reset or anything like that, but it'll just be a little comfier. And then because there's so much wood left over on this backside on that body, I'm actually going to be able to do a nice comfort carve in here.
That's really rad.
I hope it feels as good as I think it is. And I'm not just, you know, I don't know, doing a Don Quixote thing.
Well, I mean, worst case scenario, I mean, it's just, it seems like it's just one of those things you just have to refine a little bit if it doesn't come out, you know, as well as you like, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, we'll see, you know, like it's always one of those things. V1, you know, it's,
right.
It's V1.
Right. Yeah, well, and that's the thing, you know, you get some hype up for the V2. We made it even better now. So we're good to go, you know?
If or you love people the V1, are like, no, we remember V1. That was bad.
Yeah, there you go. We promise it's better this time. No, that's really cool, man. I love the, because that's one of the things that I've kind of always, I've been playing for quite a while now. And I mean, you kind of know what to expect with most guitars, You know what I mean? You know what to expect when you pick up a Tele. You know what to expect when you pick up a Strat. You know what to expect when you pick up a Les Paul or a Reverend or whatever it is. It's all relatively the same thing. You know, especially once you start getting higher on that neck. It's always something. And until you get into the more like significantly higher end guitars, or you're getting with somebody that, you know, can make you something specifically for what you want, that's not a normal thing you can get as far as that comfort up on that higher register, you know?
Yeah. And you know, Leo Fender, I think he was working on that, you know, as he left Fender and he went to Music Man, started Music Man and then GNL, you know, he was trying to work on something, and Fender still is, you know, where they round over that block that comes out of it. And that helps. It certainly helps. But you know, I remember I was never into him very much, but you know, there was a lot of, I would call them shredder guitars.
Okay.
That would have that sort of comfort carve, yeah, like on the inside there, the PRS Silver Sky, they have a comfort carve on the inside horn, on that lower horn. All these little things like that, like, do they make a huge difference? No. But whenever like you have enough of those things added together, they start making a big playability difference. And for me, it's that transition, you know, like if my hand intuitively knows what to expect as we're going up, like, oh, it's getting thicker, it's getting thicker, it's getting thicker. And then it finds like a nice, like smooth line into the body. I'm like, that would actually feel quite handy. How much time do I spend up there? I'm like a, you know, classic rock sort of guy. I'm not spending a ton of time up there, but when I do go up there, it's nice.
Yeah. Well, and it is definitely going to be, you know, person to person, that's, you know, everybody's going to be slightly different as far as their, what they choose to have on their guitar for that sort of thing. But for me as a player individually, that sounds like something I would really, 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 really need. You know, it's so annoying to sometimes have these, especially like the Fender style guitars that I've had, you know, it just feels like I get up to, you know, I don't know, get up into 12 through 15. And I'm just like, well, here we go. I'm about to not be able to, it's going to kind of hurt to get up here now, cause it's just going to have this block hitting my hand, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And it is, you know, and we start doing this thing with our hands where like, you know, our thumb, when we're down here, it's hanging over top and then it works its way to the middle. And then by the time you're up here, your thumb's like hanging off the fretboard, just alongside your other fingers. Because it's just a lot to hold, you know. I don't know if you're a bigger guy, if you have bigger hands, but for me, I'm not the biggest guy. So it was like, yeah, my hands, there's only so much I can grab onto.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully. And you know, and stay in touch. I'd love to just mail it down to you and be like, hey man, tell me your thoughts, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's my thing. I've kind of like started to get away from the more traditional, you know, body styles of things just because it just doesn't appeal to me anymore. And it's not so much an aesthetic thing. It's more of a function thing, like we were talking about. And that's why I picked up that Reverend. It wasn't because I was like, oh, cool, this is the coolest guitar I've ever seen. It's like, no, I picked it up and started playing it. And I was like, oh, this works really, really, really well for me compared to some of the other guitars that I have or have had. You know,
tell me what you love about it.
So the neck on it is that roasted maple.
Yes.
I don't have it up here. Great. I left it downstairs. No, but
I've seen some pictures. It's a beautiful sunburst. It's got the two P90s and a humbucker.
Yeah, it's got two P90s humbuckers. So sonically, it's not like any other guitar that I have. It's got a bass contour instead of a tone knob. So it has a tone knob, but then a bass contour, so I can take some of that bass off. It's downstairs right now because that's what I do when I'm not up here. In the little studio that I have, I'm playing that guitar even if I'm downstairs. I was baking my kids dinner and I was waiting for it to get finished up and I was playing the guitar. So that's why
it's downstairs. I do the exact same thing. But, you got that guy hanging around.
Yeah. But no, that's the thing with that. It's, and that's the only bad part I could see with having, you know, a business such as Decca, because it's hard to get, you know, people to actually play the thing. You know, well, but once they do, it's one of those moments, and you've seen it, I'm sure, with other guitar players too. It's like they just hit those, you know, couple chords and, you know, maybe go up the neck a little bit and you can see it on their face. They're just like, oh, there's something about this, you know what I mean? And for me, Like I said, I've never been, I'm still kind of like in shock. When I clicked on your profile on Instagram, I was just like, wow, these things are awesome. You know, I just love the way it looks. And then, you know, hearing and watching the videos of the neck joints, and you just, you know, throwing stuff around, not throwing stuff around, but you know what I mean? Picking them up and kind of.
I'm shaking it. It's a little daunting at first. I do not want that. I've just worked enough on this. I don't want it to die, but if it has to, I guess now's the time.
But yeah, and that's what just was immediate appealing to me with you guys. You know what I mean? It was super awesome.
And yeah, we just want to continue to do that. You know, I'm sure, I think I put it somewhere on the website, you know, with guitars, there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Especially solid body electric guitars. Like a lot of them make sense, but that doesn't mean you can't push the wheel forward a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know, like one of the things that you bring it up with Referent that I love, and I've installed it on some of my guitars, is that bass contour.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense, you know? And I use germanium fuzz a lot.
Okay.
And it works out really cool with that. I can get that sort of phasey sound with it. I love that. And so I tried to integrate without copying them because I didn't have enough room for another knob on the pick guard, you know, a bass cut switch.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, it basically takes you to about 6 on the Referent knob.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Just takes you there. Boom. Takes you about halfway. And so you get some of that without that full on, you know, nasal funkiness thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I respected them trying to change things up a little bit.
Sure.
And that is where we're at, where I'm always looking for that next little thing. Just like, hey, you know, what can we do that hasn't been done before, or, you know, haven't seen, not just aesthetically, but functionally.
Right.
You know, I want this guitar to be played for the next 50 years. I don't want somebody to just neglect it because it needed a neck reset and it couldn't get it. I don't want that. I want this to, if the screws all rusted out and fell out tomorrow, it would still work.
Yeah.
You know, I built a guy a Covaquinho, like this little ukulele style.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a Brazilian instrument. It's got steel strings. They're cool little guys, but he kept on talking to me about how he had problems with feedback live.
Okay.
And he was playing these acoustic Covaquinhos.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, yeah, see, this is the problem with acoustic instruments, is actually the whole reason why solid body and electric guitars got invented. And I talked to him, and he was a little skeptical. He's like, well, I don't know. He's like, it'd probably be pretty expensive because down in Brazil, you can get Covaquinhos for like the equivalent of $75.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, he has just an amalgamation of $75 Covaquinhos that don't work that well for him. But I talked him into it. And now it's the Covaquinho he takes all over the place. You know, it's a solid body instrument and looks kind of similar to these over here.
Yeah.
But it's worked. And he's brought it to me because my mother-in-law knocked it over and it fell like really hard, 6 feet onto a gymnasium floor.
Ooh, yeah.
Nothing bad happened.
Nice.
I'm not even sure if it got a dent. You know, I kind of wish it had gotten a dent. You know, it's nitro. Like, let the checking begin.
Right.
But no, it was just one of those things where I want it to sort of be like those Tellies, you know, where they'll be around along with Keith Richards and the cockroaches after the nuclear holocaust, you know.
For sure. Well, I really like what you said earlier, you know what I mean, about, you know, making small incremental things that add up to something that plays amazing. You know, you're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You're taking a unique, you know, your guys, what you guys are doing, you're taking influences from what's inspired you, but you're making small little changes just to make the instrument a little better. And that's the biggest thing for me. You're not trying to come up with some crazy new body shape that is so off the wall. You can see the homage to the Red Special, but then playing it, I'm sure, like you said, at least, you know, those small incremental changes are going to really improve the overall playability of that instrument and then therefore inspire the player to play that guitar more, you know?
Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just it, you know, but I think that where it stands right now, it's so much of it's individual, you know, like, for example, do you know what kind of neck profile, neck depth you have on your Referent?
I would have to double check. I'm not sure.
Do you like fatter necks, skinnier necks?
Usually fatter.
Fatter. It's probably a nice medium C though.
Like probably,
it's,
yeah.
It's not like shredder skinny, but it's not like you ever pick up an old Les Paul or like a reissue Les Paul.
It's got a baseball bat for a neck.
Yeah. Where you hold it and you're like, wow, is this a B? Why is that so deep? It's probably nice in the middle, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm finding is that, you know, a lot of people think they really like skinny necks until you like let them hold something that's a reasonably shaped, chunkier neck. And they're like, all of a sudden they play it for a little while, boom. They're like, actually, this is way more comfortable. You know, mm-hmm. I'm getting used to it now. And some guys who really, really love fat necks, like baseball bat necks, well, they're never going to change. They just like fat necks. And it's nice that I can just custom shape it to that for you.
Well, and that's the best part about where you're at, I think, as a small business. I mean, you can literally give them exactly what they want. You know, obviously you're going to make recommendations for what you know is going to work. But at the end of the day, I mean, if someone's hitting you up with a custom build, you're going to build them what they want within reason, I'm sure.
Yeah, within reason. Like if they tell me to make them like a Strandberg, I can't do that. But
right.
I could meet you halfway. And so, that's just it. And fortunately for me, you know, like most people, I make recommendations, just ask them like, oh, do you like hang your thumb when you play? You know, because a lot of electric guitar players do. Okay, well, that lets me know that you might be interested in more of an asymmetrical neck profile.
Sure, yeah.
And it doesn't feel crazy when you're playing it, but it does provide a little bit of comfort when you're hanging your thumb like that. I don't do any thumb hanging. I'm like pretty thumb back. It's like, okay, great. Like you might be more interested in a U, you know, that sort of classical guitar neck shape. You know, the meat behind the shoulders isn't going to be much of a concern.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
No, I was done really. Just rambling really.
Oh no, you're fine. I was going to ask though, like how does the process work for you guys as far as the custom build stuff goes? So if somebody hits you up, And what happens from there?
They contact me. I schedule a time to have a phone call with them.
Okay.
You know, it generally takes, it depends. Sometimes an hour.
Sure.
Sometimes a little less. Sometimes a little bit more if we get talking. And I run them through a series of specs. Just what they like, what they currently play. I can generally, based on that, you know, go from there. Once that consultation is done, then it generally takes me about a week to 2 weeks if it's like a new build, you know, something we haven't built before, for me to draw up the 3D profiles for it. And then I'll shoot them pictures of that. With confirmation of that, that is generally when the deposit's due. It's half down. And then production starts. Once the neck and body are shaped up, I'll generally meet with people, or I would mail that to them, the neck to them, just to get approval. And then they'd send it back. I do finishing. Once finishing is all done, then we would get final payment and a happy guitar player.
There you go. Pretty straightforward.
It is. And, you know, here where we spray and stuff, it's very subject to the weather. Like I would have loved it and spraying today, but I had to wait for tomorrow. So that's where I tell people, like, you know, give me a little bit of leeway on the finishing time because it depends on the weather a little bit. However, you know, the past couple of builds, we've gotten them done super quick because the weather had been working with us.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, and I'm not too savvy on that aspect of it all too, but I think some people don't realize how much that can affect the finishing process. It's just the ambient weather outside, you know, the humidity. Yep. Yeah. I was about to say the humidity is just such a straight killer for that sort of process. You know what I mean? And like I said earlier, I mean, we're not too far off from each other and it has been almost unbearably humid the past probably week. Maybe something like that.
Starting last, not yesterday Monday, but last Monday.
Right.
Walked out and it was straight into a sauna.
Yeah.
And St. Louis to Kentucky, you know, Tennessee, where you're at, it's just a hodgepodge of weather. You know, we wait 20 minutes and then all of a sudden it's like, is it snowing in May?
Absolutely. Yep.
It's so yeah, fortunately though, the finishing gods look out for me and shellac is pretty forgiving.
Yeah.
And nitro can be made forgiving.
Sure.
You know, with the right amount of reducer and things like that. I make it work. I'll make it work. But yeah, no, and normally people like that little bit of time too, because it gives us time to communicate a little bit more about what's going on. And then too, you know, I understand, you know, even $1,000, you know, that's a lot of money just to throw down once. Mm-hmm. So if you go half up and then you have a couple, you have a month or so and you can come up with the rest, that makes it a much easier process.
Yeah.
So then you have to pull a whole paycheck like you went to the strip club or something.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, that's not unreasonable for most working musicians either. You know, and that's right. That, to kind of go back to what you were talking about earlier, how you're probably charging a little too less. But I mean, you're doing a great service for the musician at that point. You know what I mean? You're getting them a solid instrument for an affordable price. Because I teach at a local shop. And teach guitar, and I've played some guitars off the wall that are upwards of that price point, you know, that are supposed to be from the standard company, so to speak, and they're just not really that great. Not all of them. I'm not trying to say all of them suck. I'm just saying occasionally you pick up one and it's just like, well, I wouldn't pay $1,000, $1,200 for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I remember that, you know, feeling. Because that maybe was another facet in why I started building guitars was it's like, hell, I can't justify spending $1,200, $1,300, $1,400, on and on it goes. I can't justify spending that kind of money. It's a lot of money. And what if I get a stinker, you know, or what if I inevitably, like I always want to do modifications to it.
Right.
Am I ruining its value? And so it's really cool when people reach out to me and especially if they know what they want.
Yeah.
You know, that makes things way easier. It's like, well, do you mind doing these style tuning pegs or whatever it is? Yeah. Thank you for letting me know now before I drill the holes.
Right.
Like,
right.
I'll make it happen for you.
Yeah.
And that's just it. I did the math the other day and a 1952 Telecaster would cost roughly $1,500 today.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, okay, so if I can beat that price, you know, then I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
And I think I can beat that price by a significant margin. And then with, you know, what I would call B stocks, like old boy hanging over there.
Yep.
I'm like, I'll compete with the Fender Player Series.
Yeah.
On that. You know, hey, I understand that's a brand that you know and you trust. You know where I live. Like you could just to take this. If you ever have any problems, let me know. And I think you'll be happy that you made this choice.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap this up, let's get your plugs out of the way real quick. Where can everybody find you guys at?
You can go to Deka Guitars, DEKKA guitars.com. And if you have a custom build you're interested in or something like that, anything really, just shoot me an email. And then Instagram, of course, at Deka Guitars. That's another great place to reach out to me. And if you have a custom build in mind, or if you're interested in one of our current guitars, or maybe just something a little bit.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, Ethan, I had a great time talking to you, man. I actually, you know, it's awesome to just go from seeing an Instagram page to actually getting a face-to-face conversation with somebody, you know?
It really was good. Yeah, I was kind of skeptical. I'm like, why is he wanting to talk to me?
You know? I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was fun. And I hope that we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Stay in touch. Absolutely. Well, for everybody, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up, and we'll check you guys next week on Man the Helm Podcast.